Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. I am so excited to be at the end of our second week together. And if you've been tuning in, thanks so much. We are just getting started. My producer, Stephanie, and I are working on going through all of your questions. We're starting to hear from so many listeners about all of those things that you want to hear about. And today we are going to do what we're calling a special episode called Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. Now, I did this in the podcast. And as a reminder, the doctor is the professor brain that I have. The nurse is the hands-on nursing experience that I have. And the mama is the most important part. And my heart as a mom to be a guide on the side to help equip and engage and encourage and empower parents to tackle life's toughest issues together. So I'm going to be answering some questions that I've been getting from you. And you never know, if you write in, it may be your question that we're answering. Now, I told you from the very beginning that we are not going to be unafraid to take on some really tough topics. I don't want parents to feel like their parenting is fear-based. We are going to be confident and faith-informed. But today is a day I'm going to talk to you about some pretty tough things. So if you've got little ears around, now might be a good time to go into another room, to put on your headphones, or like you just heard in the announcement, to use Alexa to listen to the podcast later, because these are really tough things that are not great for little ears. So without further ado, let me go ahead and start off and tell you that we're going to be talking about some issues of relational intimacy. We're going to talk about some pitfalls that students fall into, including sextortion. And that's what I'm going to start with. So you see where I'm going, making sure you have time to protect those little ears. Now, if you were listening to American Family Radio earlier today in the news recap, you may have heard a heartbreaking story that I want to share with you. Now, sadly, when I heard this story on the radio this morning, it is not the first story of this kind that I've heard, but it may be new to you. Now, a lot of times when we think about teens sexting or getting involved in sextortion, for some reason, parents just automatically think about girls being at risk for sending photos. But mamas and daddies and grandparents and people who have boys in your life, there is a rising risk that I really want you to be aware of. And this is something called sextortion. Now, I'm taking this news from the Clarion Ledger as it was reported there. And this particular story is about a young man, 16 years old, named Walker Montgomery. Now, he had just gotten his driver's license. He went hunting with his dad. He drove home. He worked out in the family barn. He had dinner with his family and prayed with his mama before he went to bed. Now, I have a 16-year-old son. I have a 14-year-old son. This just all hits a little too close to home for me. Now, what happened to Walker was that around midnight that night, he was DM'd, direct messaged by someone who was posing as a girl, initiating a sexual encounter. Now, parents, as much as this will strike fear in our hearts, we have to be aware of what is going on in the world. The person on the other end of the encounter recorded the episode. So the teenagers often think that they are engaging in a consensual encounter with a peer, and that is not the case. After they recorded this episode, they immediately threatened to send this to all of Walker's family and friends and copies of the event if he did not pay them $1,000. Now, a 2-hour just agonizing negotiation went on, according to this news report, saying that Walker didn't have any money. He begged the person not to release the images in the video and told them that he was going to kill himself. And the catfishers told him, go ahead, because your life is already over. And Walker did end up taking his life. Now, these catfishers, from what I'm understanding from this report, were from Nigeria. This is not the first report that I've seen, especially of catfishers from other countries posing as American teens. This is so easy to do because only about 60% of teens in the U.S. use privacy settings on their social media. This is a gold mine of OSI, or what law enforcement calls open source information. So they can go on there and learn how to mimic language or how to ingratiate themselves into a group of friends and get credibility vicariously, saying like, oh yeah, you're a friend of a friend of a friend. And I've seen you on, you know, so many of my friends' contact lists or friend list or whatever terminology according to that that platform is used. And this is so heartbreaking. And so to Walker's family, I just want to say I am so heartbroken in reading about your loss. And Walker's dad, I believe, was on earlier, and he just talked about how he wanted to use this story to really give other parents hope. And he said, the quote in the article is, my mission now is for God to be glorified in what we do. I want people to see that God's power is greater than the power of the evil in this world. He has a plan, and I want people to see that. So let's talk about this moment. Now, it's really important to know that many times when we read stories about this, Walker and other teenagers would be so afraid of judgment of their moral decisions. But what we have to know about kids' brains is that their decision-making is not really fully matured until the mid-20s. And so they don't think through things very well at all. And having a smartphone is like an accelerant to a fire. And so many times it's not a failure of their morals, a failure of their spiritual values. It's a failure of their decision making. And with one click of their thumb on a smartphone, they can instantly and impulsively, as they are developmentally wired to do, they can make a decision that can change the trajectory of their life. And many times they don't see a way out of this. So parents, this is what we're going to talk about today. And I hate that we have to talk about some heavy things, but there is hope on the other side. Now, all of us as parents have to drop the mantra that, oh, not my kid, or oh, that would never happen to us. Because as a pediatric nurse practitioner, I often meet families behind closed doors, which is part of why I titled my book, The Way That I Did. I meet those families at a point of crisis they never saw coming. No parent walks into my clinic and says, oh, hey, we're here today because my teen is sexting and having some symptoms of mental health. Can you check it out for us? No, that's not how it happens. Usually what happens is parents have that spidey sense that something is off, but they don't exactly know what. They might say, my teen is sleeping a lot, having headaches and feeling tired. Maybe it's the flu or something wrong with their blood sugar. And in those moments where I often speak with teens alone, secrets often spill over waterfalls of deep fear of talking to their parents about challenging issues. Their parents care so much, but what is lacking in these situations is an invitation and a clearly outlined open door to disclose risk-taking behaviors and resulting harm. And we may think, my kid, of course, knows they can always talk to me about anything. But they don't. They really don't. And the truth is they care so much about what you think of them and they don't want to disappoint you. So many times they may disclose to me as a healthcare provider because, frankly, they don't care as much what I think about them, but I can help them gauge their parents' reaction and help them know, like, what are my options? What does it look like going forward so that I know how afraid I should feel in disclosing this to my parents? That's their motivation in coming to me. And my point of view as a Christian healthcare provider is always to loop that connection between parent and teen, because most of the time the parents want it, the teens want it, but sometimes you just don't know how to get it. Now, the truth is, parents, there is a disconnect between what we as parents really want the world to look like for our kids and what it actually looks like. So this is a time where we have got to just face the facts of what's going on. And if we want to influence our teens' worldview, we have to view the world as they see it, through the lens of the realities that they are facing. And we really need new social skills to parent effectively in a social media kind of world that a lot of us are just not familiar with, are not using. It's really hard because kids are always going to be ahead of the curve. So the answer here is not to become an expert in social media or to become an expert in all of the threats that could potentially intersect your kids. The answer here is to become an expert in your child, to know when things are off, to always have that open door. And you have to start that by listening with intentionality. Most of the time, our kids, especially as they start to hit that preteen age, they are engaging in conversations and they are experiencing situations in the sphere, many that we're not aware of. Sometimes their decision making is poor and someone, their friend, will tell them something and they think, oh, I don't want to tell my parent because then they're not going to let me hang out with this friend. And then if I can't hang out with this friend, then I'm going to lose my lunch table buddies and then I'll be alone. And then what will happen? This is how their brains work. And they're navigating new situations in the context of social norms we just never had to face. They're making critical decisions in real time about how to respond. And many kids are not at all confident or comfortable with those decisions. They second guess themselves and they wonder, did I do or say the right thing? But again, they're developmentally wired to understand concrete thinking, to understand the principles of right and wrong and justice. And they know when they do wrong, their natural inclination is to lie or to hide that to avoid being punished. So parents, we have to look for opportunities to initiate and lead a conversation. They're not going to come to us and say, you know, I've been thinking about sexting and maybe, like, what should I do if that ever happens? Do you have any advice for me? Like, if you have a kid who asks that, then I need you to call in because I need to know how you're initiating that conversation. But most of the time, it's going to take us initiating and leading a conversation to equip them to speak and act with grace and confidence. So look for those cues, parents. Maybe they just casually mention something in passing. Maybe you have a mutual encounter that prompts discussion. Maybe they come to you with a serious concern for a friend or a situation they're experiencing. Are you intentional in listening for those conversation cues and then pressing forward? I've told you before, you know, my kids, even when I'm talking to them, and I do this every day, they don't say, oh, thanks, Mom. You delivered that tough conversation in a way that just made me feel so comfortable, and I really appreciate it. No, I've told you, my son will put up his hoodie and pull the drawstring tighter and tighter and tighter until I'm literally having a conversation with his nose, and he will say, we will never speak of this again. But of course we do. So when these moments of opportunity come your way, you can have three decisions to make when these opportunities present to initiate conversation. Number one, you can ignore it and shut it down pretty fast. Number two, you can respond impulsively from a place of emotion, doing most of the talking and very little listening. Or three, you can intentionally initiate a meaningful, honest conversation about an incredibly challenging topic in which you listen more than you speak, knowing you'll be asked questions for which you don't have the answers. Your teens absolutely are talking to someone about these tough topics, and we have the amazing privilege as parents to choose if that person is going to be us. So stay tuned. We'll talk more about specifically initiating some of these conversations and what to do if you discover something or your teen discloses something. So don't go away. We'll talk about this more after the break.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Hey friends, welcome back for the second segment of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show today. If you were listening before the break, I gave you a warning that today, as I've promised you, we will do from time to time. We're talking about some pretty tough stuff. So if you've got little ears around, it would be a good time to go into another room, to put in your headphones, or to use Alexa to listen to the podcast later on. We are talking about thinking about the unthinkable and going to that moment where I have been many, many times as a pediatric nurse practitioner, meeting with families who are blindsided by something they never saw coming. And we're talking about finding hope and not being fear-based, but being faith-informed in leading your children through conversation about these things before they happen. Now, I've said this week, a lot of parents are afraid to expose their kids to things they haven't been exposed to. And certainly it is our job to protect them as much as we possibly can. But in this world where we are living at the speed of a smartphone, it's not possible to protect them from everything. And that is a defensive strategy. So as an offensive strategy, we have to, in a developmentally appropriate way, meet them where they are and present these concepts to them in a way that positions us as the expert and reassures them of their safety and our unconditional love for them. Now, I shared a really sad story, a heartbreaking tragedy of a boy named Walker who took his own life after being tricked by extortionists who got him to sext with what he thought was a peer. But really, these were catfishers who were scammers from Nigeria. And sadly, Walker took his own life because he couldn't imagine a way going forward. And sometimes what these scammers will do is they will make children more afraid of living than they are of dying. So let's go to that moment and your child discloses something to you. Your vision goes tunnel vision. Everything starts to spin and you think, oh my goodness, are we really here at this moment? Or perhaps you discover something. We have to let go of the not my kid or my kid would never mantra. That's a dangerous social pedestal with a really long, hard fall. And if we don't, as parents, think about it beforehand, we put ourselves at the mercy of our emotions. And most of the time, as parents, when we are exposed to something that our kids disclose to us or we feel blindsided, we're usually angry. And we're not usually angry at our child. We are angry for them. We are so angry that something came in on our watch and derailed their plan and their safety. But our kids can't differentiate that. So the important initial step is offering grace with a clearly defined path to relationship restoration. So usually if we're angry, if we're emotional, we say things like, I can't believe you did this. What were you thinking? You have hurt me. This disappoints me. You've shamed our family. How can I trust you? But parents, listen, if you don't remember anything else from this whole episode or this podcast, try to remember to practice saying something like this. When your child discloses something to you, let the first words out of your mouth be, I'm so sorry you experienced this. I'm so sorry this happened to you. it doesn't negate what is going to happen. You can follow it up with something like, I'm here to support you with healthy boundaries and connection to the resources you need. This is going to be hard. We're going to have some tough moments, but we will get through it together. And I want you to know that no matter what, I love you. That can be really, really important because your decision in that instant could change the course of your teen's life, and how you react can shape their self-image, their behavior, their decision-making. Now, I don't want you to think of that as pressure. Oh my gosh, I have all of that. I want you to think of that as an honor because your teen loves and respects you that much. So don't lead with a litany of punishments saying you're grounded for life, your life as you know it is over. These are just not helpful. And again, I'm not saying there shouldn't be consequences, but discipline should never be delivered from a place of anger. And the truth is, most of the time, when teens have engaged in this kind of high-risk behavior, the natural consequences of their actions are so great that we don't need to pile shame on top of that. They already have to live with what they have done. So again, saying, I'm sorry you experienced this. This is upsetting. Let's take some time to let our emotions settle before we talk about it some more. No matter what happened, I love you no matter what. So you have to acknowledge the reality of what they've experienced. If they've been engaged in sexting, for example, and they have had those pictures shared, which very often happens, their trust has been broken, or they have been extorted, like we heard about this teen from Starkville named Walker. We have to acknowledge the reality of that trauma. It can be very deeply upsetting, and it may be something that you need some counseling or some professional services for mental health to get through that and to promote effective coping and resilience. And sometimes at the beginning, parents think, oh, that seems like overkill. That seems like a lot. But sometimes going early, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And going early, being able to talk through some things, knowing you have support from the beginning, that can be really helpful. It's important to realize that in this moment and how we are responding, and in the days to come, we're shaping their view of the way God loves them. Remember that teens hide things because they are afraid that we'll see risk and we'll remove their access to their social circle. But if we talk about it beforehand, create some open channels of communication, create those ground rules for disclosure. Here's what you can expect if this happens. They'll share more. Because you've created a safe space. You've opened a door for grace. They are going to need help reclaiming their dignity and their self-worth. Remember, these kids are growing up in cancel culture where they feel like one mistake and their life is over. We need to reassure them that there is love and grace. Of course, as parents, I'm a parent myself. I don't want my teens to sext or to vape or to use substances. I don't want them to experience gender confusion or have an unexpected teen pregnancy. But the truth is, our kids aren't perfect and we aren't either. So leaving that door open for restoration encourages early disclosure before there is great harm. Now, when we step into our kids' worlds and we see the realities, like this horrible story I've shared with you today, then we can cultivate empathy for what they're facing, and we can lead with courage. Now, parents, this is really hard to hear, but some of you, your kids may have already experienced something they are just terrified to share with you. So creating those expectations for your response and the consequences that will happen can give them the courage to share and take that first step towards freedom. So I promise you, it doesn't seem like it, but kids do want you to initiate conversation with confidence and grace while sparing their dignity. That is really, really important. And we can have hope as parents today that reflecting the kindness of God can lead our kids to repentance. That's what the scripture says. It's God's kindness that leads us to repentance. And in Lamentations 3, we are encouraged that because of the Lord's great love for us, we are not consumed, but His compassions never fail, and His mercies are new every morning. God sees and He knows all of the hurt that we endure. And in Romans chapter 5, we are encouraged again that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. And our eternal hope in Christ does not disappoint or put us to shame because the love of God has been poured out in our lives through the Holy Spirit. Remember that God will never leave you or forsake you, and through seasons of challenge, we are never alone. These are the messages we need to give to our kids. Now that we've talked about how to handle it, let me walk you through some of the specifics, and let's start with this specific case of sextortion. Now, that may be a new term for some of you, but it's an extortion crime where people will trick other people online and somehow gain intimate material of them, and it is a real threat for today's teens. Sextortion is always a crime, so it should always be reported to the local police or the FBI or whatever law enforcement pathway you have in your community. And again, too often I see this scenario just ending with teens feeling so ashamed. So what happens is they'll start a cycle of secrecy. And anytime you have secrecy like that, then there's going to be self-harming because they're going to try to self-medicate their pain. That can be through self-harming, through using substances, through drinking, through trying to control their eating in an unhealthy way, or sadly, by ending their life. Now, according to the FBI is looking at sextortion and the rise of it in our young people. And they define it as a serious crime that occurs when someone threatens to distribute your private and sensitive material. If you don't provide back to them images of a sexual nature, sexual favors, or money. And the perpetrator may also threaten to harm your teen's friends, or you, their family, their relatives, by using information that they have obtained. In the story I read up this morning, these catfishers, these scammers, these horrible abusers of children said they had already sent these photos to the mother. Now we have to remember that teens are developmentally wired to believe what is said. It's not until the later teen years that they can reason and say, well, that's probably not true, or let me find out. They believe that's true. So they threatened to post these on revenge porn sites. Now that is a real formal entity. Or they'll send the photos to friends or families or the school or church leaders. And it can start on any site, any app, any messaging platforms. And one of my big concerns in working primarily with kids who have been abused and exploited is that social media platforms like Facebook are moving to encrypted messenger. Now, what that does is it removes the platform's obligation to report. And when I first started looking at this and working with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at the beginning of the pandemic, those reports of abuse, especially on social media messenger, skyrocketed. I mean, there were more than 1.1 million reported instances in just the first 3 months of the pandemic. But it can also happen on a gaming platform. And then what happens is a lot of times they will try to get the kid to go to another safer platform that allows for anonymous users, something like Kick or WhatsApp or something like that. They may claim to already have a revealing picture or video. Now, I'm seeing people who are using AI. They may take a public photo that is a clothed photo and then have AI. And then the teen is confused. They don't know how in the world they got this. But more often, this crime starts when teens believe they're communicating with someone their own age who's interested in a relationship. It can feel very flattering or engaging in what they believe to be consensual sexting with a peer. Now, in today's world, the messages that teens are getting are not should you sext, but how should you best sext? And if you look at magazines like Teen Vogue, they are publishing articles with these headlines, which is horrifying because, oh yeah, it's also a crime. So how are kids supposed to navigate the legal nuance of that? They can't, and they don't. So parents should know that criminals are skilled and ruthless. Teens shouldn't be punished or shamed if they are tricked, for being tricked. At the "my child would never" approach is just so dangerous because children are children. They're susceptible, they're vulnerable, they're naive, and teens especially can be desperately afraid to disclose their situation. So here are 6 tips straight from the FBI to help parents keep their kids safe. So talk to your kids about these things. Number 1, be selective about what you share online, especially publicly. Now, I advise for all minors to have private profiles because, again, that OSI, that open source information, is so easy for predators who sit online all day looking for kids who are vulnerable and have a lot of open information. So make sure their profile is set to private. The other thing that can really, really help protect your kid as far as what you share online is thinking about that profile picture. Now, when you post a picture that very clearly shows, hey, I am a young teenager and I want you to follow me, like me, and I go to this school, that makes it very easy. But if the profile picture is a puppy or a beach or a geometric pattern that is really nondescript, it will be very, very easy for predators just to slide right over that profile because there are too many other vulnerable profiles that are open. So that's tip number 1, be selective about what you share online, especially publicly. Number 2, block or ignore messages from strangers. Kids should not be friends with people online that they're not friends with in real life. Number 3, be aware that people can pretend to be anything or anyone online. Videos and photos are not proof that people are who they claim to be. Images can be altered by AI or stolen, or somebody can take over their account and be pretending to be someone they're not. Number 4, be suspicious if you meet someone in a game or app and they start asking you to go to a different platform. Number 5, be in the know that nothing really disappears online. And number 6, be willing to ask for help. Stick around. When we come back, we'll talk about more threats and more ways for parents to empower and engage their kids to be safe online.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to the third segment here of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show today. If you were listening in, you heard us talking about some pretty tough stuff today. We will need to do that from time to time, and so I will again give a little warning for those of you who were just joining us to watch out for those little ears around you. We're talking about some tough topics, so make sure that those little ears are protected as we talk about these things. We've talked about sextortion and the rising threat that it is to our teens, and we've talked about how sometimes it is not so much a failure of morals, but it is a failure of decision-making. Morals and spiritual values are so much more cognitively complex subjects that take a while for kids to be able to map to their decision-making, and so sometimes they just make poor, impulsive decisions. And great kids can make really poor choices. And so we are talking about finding hope in that, finding grace, finding a path to restoration, and most of all, talking about it before it happens, recognizing that any kid can get in any situation. And the more safety gaps that we put in place, the more conversation we have, the more we position ourselves as parents, as the experts in their life and the source of safety, then the safer and the healthier our kids will be. We are not going to be fear-based. We are going to be faith-informed. So in the last segment, I just gave you 6 tips from the FBI to help keep your kid safe from sextortion online. Now, I thought this was really interesting because, of course, there's a lot of political and social narrative about governmental sources. But all of that aside, even according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, when they put out this bulletin alerting about sextortion and the risks for teens, you know what they said was the best defense? Information sharing and open lines of communication between teens and their parents. And I couldn't agree more. That is the best defense, because, and it's the best offense too. So making sure that your door is open. I say to my kids all the time, you know, you can always tell me anything. And they're like, roll their eyes. Yeah, mom, we know. But I will tell them and I will keep telling them. Let them know that your first move will be to help always, that yes, there may be some tough things down the road. Now, it seems dramatic, but when we talk to our teens, you can say, look, it seems dramatic, but you need to know that there are predators online who want to exploit you. Now, I will say that with the caveat that we know fear-based strategies are not effective. So, you know, if you grew up in Gen X or maybe a little earlier, and you might remember seeing those crunched up cars that they would bring to school for DUI, a lot of research has been done about tactics like that. And we find that although it makes us feel uncomfortable and we remember it, it doesn't really have an impact on changing our behavior. So we can't lead with fear. We have to lead with confidence. And the other thing you want to tell your kids are that online predators are really smart. It can be easy to find yourself in a tough situation. So sharing stories like what I shared at the top of the hour that happened with Walker, for with your older teens, it might be appropriate to send that story to them and say, I read or heard about this story today. I'd really love to talk to you about it. It's so sad. Can we talk about that and see where they're coming from? Tell your teens that, hey, predators count on you to be too scared to tell me if you get in a situation over your head. They can try to manipulate you and to make you afraid of what's going to happen. But I want you to know that even though things may be tough, we will always work to get it through together. And you can tell your teen, it's my job to give you advice to keep you safe online. And I want you to know that no matter what happens, you can tell me and figure out a way together. So some questions maybe to ask about this sextortion case specifically. Ask your teens, how do you feel about encountering strangers online? What dangers do you see, if any? And you may want to ask them, how do you decide if someone even is a stranger? Because if they're a friend of a friend of a friend and they're Johnny's brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, you know, old college roommate, oh, well, all of a sudden they're a friend. So who do you consider a stranger? Ask your kids, have you seen or heard a situation like this for someone you know? Or how could you be kind to someone who experiences this? Or you can say, I read an article today about sextortion, or listened to the Dr. Nurse Mama program. And you know what? It scared me a little bit, but I want to talk about it so we don't have to feel scared. What do you know about it, and how does it make you feel? So those are important things to have. Now, I want to give you another tip that I have shared before in my book and online that can really help parents with this whole decision-making thing. Because a lot of times kids just make a decision that is really poorly informed because they don't have the literal brain capacity. When we ask them, we talked earlier on the show with Lauren Gaines about parents saying, what were you thinking? The short answer is, they weren't, because they're not developmentally wired to think at a comprehensive, abstract level yet. So sometimes when kids are out somewhere, They're not going somewhere intending to do something nefarious. They are not going somewhere with the intent of breaking your rules or breaking their values. But often they just find themselves in a situation over their head. And that's what it sounds like happened in this situation too. So sometimes if they're out somewhere, they get to a party and they discover, oh no, there's drinking here. Or oh no, there's no parents here and I was told there were going to be adults here. Or maybe even what I've seen many times is kids will bring their old prescriptions from their house. They will take them from their parents and open them and put them in a bowl and pass them around as a party. And hey, you just take one and see what happens. Very, very unwise. So does your teen have a code word to stay safe? So again, thinking about, you know, just being honest within that moment, if they call us, this is usually how the conversation goes. Hey, I need you to pick me up, Mom. Oh, okay, honey, why? What's going on? I just need you to pick me up. Okay, I'm feeling like something's wrong here. Like, what is going on? Tell me what's going on. Well, somebody's drinking. Who's drinking? Jenny's friend. Who's Jenny? A girl at school? Do I know Jenny? And your anger rises. Okay, I want you to consider this alternative conversation. Hey, Mom, did you make your deadline? I'll be right there. Thanks. Bye-bye. That's it. And in this case, the code word is deadline. And it is a code word for, hey, I'm in over my head. I need a rescue. I need you to come right now. I frankly don't care what excuse my kid gives. They can say, my mom says I have to come home. There's a family emergency. I could not care less. Use me as an excuse. I just want them out of there as fast as possible. So that can be a really easy way that you're proactive in giving them an out and thinking, okay, what are they going to do if I call and I try to tell them there's drinking here? Like, what's going to go on? But if you've made an agreement in advance, hey, I will come and get you. The rule can be, I'll pick you up. No questions asked. Until the next morning. Now, there's a lot of debate about this, and there are some child advocates who say, I'll just never ask about it. I certainly do not endorse that approach. We have to have tough conversation, but you can make it, I won't ask you about it right away. We'll wait a couple of hours. We'll wait until the next morning. Frankly, I'm probably going to need my emotions to settle down and for me not to feel so angry. Once I get them home, I know they're safe. You know, I can see that everything is okay. That is going to help quite a bit. And so I would encourage you to think about with your child, do you have a code word to get yourself out of these kinds of situations? Now, what other kinds of situations can that be? Let's talk about some similar things, but that are a little bit different. Let me tell you about deep fake porn. Okay, this doesn't even sound like a real thing, but this is basically what I alluded to a little bit earlier, someone using artificial intelligence technology to put the face of someone who's unconsenting onto pornographic images or videos of someone else's body. Now, this started with celebrities, people wanting to see celebrities, but I'm seeing it. And, you know, some of you ladies out there like me may have been in a situation where there was somebody out in a public place, maybe somebody who looked creepy and was taking pictures. This is something we really have to be aware of because consumers of pornography are like collectors of images and they're constantly looking for new faces or for new images. This is again why I encourage no children to have any public social media because it's very easy to pull their face off of an image and put it onto another image. Now, kids, if you do this, if they do this to kids, they can be really confused and think, well, it doesn't matter that that's not my body. People will think it's my body and it's the same thing as being my body. And that can be really, really disturbing for them. And it's easy for them to be tricked online with strangers saying they have photos and they need to pay them. And I'm seeing kids trying to figure out how to get Apple gift cards or Bitcoin or things like that. So other things to know about deepfakes. 96% of deepfakes are sexually explicit, and they feature women who did not consent to the creation of that content. Now, again, all of these, you know, social media sites are very well organized, and there is a site called Mr. Deepfakes that's a free access porn website that boasts 17 million visitors a month. And the social media platform Discord is becoming very popular for deepfake porn. And another consideration is that while Visa and MasterCard stopped payments to Pornhub, it's still paying sites like Fantopia, which is also popular for deepfakes. Now, here is the really disturbing thing. People can use apps to create or pay for artificial porn creation. So basically what they do is give pictures of their friends or family or coworkers or whatever they want to have, and then say, make me a video, kind of like the silly elf videos you see at Christmas time, but much more nefarious. And most states have laws governing revenge porn, which we talked about, but only four, that's California, New York, Georgia, and Virginia, have laws against deepfakes. Okay, I told you we weren't going to be fear-based, but all scared to death, so what can we do? Here are some things that you can do to help protect your kids. First of all, delay social media for your teens as long as you possibly can. This is an easy question for me to answer, and one of the most frequent questions that I get: how old should my kid be before I let them on social media? Well, it should not even be a conversation until age 13. That's the age set by the Children's Online Privacy Act. And if you check that box that says, yes, I'm 13, you've violated their terms of use and potentially voided any legal protection available to you should something bad happen on that platform. And I can't tell you how many parents I see who say, you know, but I watch it really closely. My kid is responsible. We really have to do a gut check, parents, and ask ourselves what kind of messages we're sending to our kids when we say, yeah, check the box when you're not 13, or, you know, we're buying movie tickets and, oh, you're going to be 11 today so that I can pay the kids, you know, view. Just all of these things our kids are watching are ethics. And I have encountered patients who have experienced abuse and exploitation online before they're 13, and there's not much that can be done. So that is one thing that you can do. Also, tell your teen to tell you immediately if anyone ever threatens them. Just remind them. And they may say, oh gosh, okay, yeah, whatever, that's not going to happen to me. But it might happen to a friend, and they may come and tell you that that happened. Take the opportunity to talk to your teen about pornography and about sexting and about using images without people's consent. Even if they're non-pornographic deepfake videos, kids have to know they cannot believe everything they see on the internet, and they need to verify information with the trusted adults. Now, you might be surprised at how many kids are familiar with the concept of deepfakes, and they may give a little chuckle knowing that, oh, here's my old mom or old dad asking me about deepfakes. But use that to your advantage. Kids love to be able to teach their parents something, and this is where we can partner our old school skills, our old school knowledge, with their new world view. And again, you can do this by using the model of communication that I have lined out for you in my book, Behind Closed Doors. This is how I talk to kids about really uncomfortable things in a very comfortable way. It's four easy steps. First, listen with your face. Second, offer open-ended questions. So start with questions, don't lead with lecturing. Third, validate their emotions. Say, I can see this has got you worried. I can see this made you upset. And E, explore next steps together. If you build that communication bridge, I promise your relationship will be stronger and stronger and stronger. Hey, I want to thank you so much for tuning in today and sticking with me in this tough conversation. We have some great shows planned for you next week. Do not miss out. Invite a friend. Keep writing in with your questions, and I'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.